Pawnee is an incredibly superstitious town. A traveling magician came through one time and he pulled a rabbit out of a hat, and the mob burned him at the stake for being a witch. The year was 1973.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
Welcome to Two Magicians, One Mic. My name is Nick Paul. That is Michael Rayner. Michael, thank you for doing this free podcast. Appreciate it.
Yes, as people know, I will do many, many things free. I will do tons of things free. You just have to ask me. And if I'm not doing anything, I will be doing it for free and or near free.
Can we just start the podcast with this amazing, I don't want to call it a rant. I want to call it like this just philosophical variety experience that me and a few other magicians had with you while you were performing on stage at the Three of Clubs at the new Bad Boys of Magic show in Hollywood. What was that like? And I've seen you kind of do this a few times at Booby Trap, and it's kind of this amazing polar opposite character that I see you do in family shows.
Well, I mean, that's the whole thing, that we have our regular shows that we do, and then if we're at a show where we're just, it's everything is allowed, nothing is taboo, all is great, and all emotional content is fine. Then it's awesome, and it seemed like the Bad Boys of comedy, because they were doing condom jokes and whatever. I felt I could do whatever I wanted to do.
Sure.
And I don't want to spoil their final bit, but after I saw their final bit, I was happy that no matter what I did during that whole show, it was fine. But it was just many different components to that. I can't even explain what I did exactly. Just say, but it's this. America's Got Talent's a sham. the Gong Show with Mike Myers is a sham. These are all, everything's a sham. Then also, just show business is a sham, because there was a, emotionally, there was an event that happened. There was a show as I was coming to the Bad Boys of Comedy, of Magic, the new Bad Boys of Magic. I was canceled like 3 days. There was a show tomorrow, and replaced by Reptiles. I was replaced
this is
by
a true story.
And then I had an audience member actually read it, and went on and on about show business. And the thing is, I have done shows at Elon Musk's house, at Norman Lear's house, all over the world. I've been at the Tokyo Dome opening for Cheap Trick doing my show. I have done shows for That 70s Show doing warm-up. No matter how much you do, you can still be replaced by Reptiles and be humiliated. And I sort of enjoy the humiliation, because there's a double component that I was going to say before we started the podcast. Mm-hmm. The double component is, I don't even want to take shows from this client anymore, because the rate is so low. It was a rate that I did when I first moved to LA many years ago. Mm-hmm. But then the guy that was the booker, he sadly got cancer and died. And then his wife took over. And I actually asked somebody, how much longer do I have to do shows for her, because her husband died? Do you know what I mean?
Sure, yeah.
And they said to me, they looked at me and they said, one more year. And I'm about 4 months away from that year. Mm-hmm. When they said to me, you have to do it for this amount of time. So I'm 4 months away and I don't have to do any more shows. So even though I don't even want to do shows for her anymore, then I was still canceled from one of the shows I don't even want to do. And It's even more humiliating being canceled from shows you don't want to do.
Well, you bring that up, and like, you literally have the credentials of everything. You've done America's Got Talent. You've done The Late Late Show. You've done Letterman. You've
James
done
Corden, Sesame Street.
You've done all these
several Nickelodeon shows, but nobody knows who I am. Nobody cares. But it's fine. That's how it is in show business.
And you legit have this outlook that has been, you know, immensely helpful for me, of it doesn't matter, in saying that in a good way.
No, and it is a good way, because if you start to think that you're better than everything, even people that have been on network sitcoms or people that have had their own Vegas shows, you can have a Vegas show and it gets canceled, and then you got to get back to square one. You know, there's tons of broke people that have huge credits And it's because they think that, well, I am this guy. I'm special. You're never special unless you're like one of the chosen boys, like a mm-hmm. like a Copperfield or like a maybe even like a David Blaine or a Criss Angel. But other than those, mm-hmm. you know, and then I'm going to even speak like actors like your Tom Hanks and stuff like that. But there's a whole mid-range of actors and performers. You're just working class. You're just, mm-hmm. you know, gig to gig, you know.
Where do you think that comes from? Because we're both Michigan folk, Midwestern folk. Do you think it comes from that, quote unquote, what you hear tossed around a lot, Midwestern values? Or do you just think that's being in the business long enough?
Gosh, you know, I don't know. It's weird because I think it's also comes from not having a trust fund, because I just had friends that had a trust fund and finally their parents cut them off and they're in their 50s and they had to sell their house and move into a rental because they couldn't afford their house payment anymore. And I don't have a trust fund. The wife doesn't have a trust fund.
Yeah.
We're just like, we know we have to hustle and get the gigs to gig, mm-hmm. you know, and craft a career. And I just looked at my, we had another fine year here in LA, the wife and I, and it's weird because it's like I did a ton of shows where it's like people just handing you a check and they're not giving you a 1099 afterwards, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you have to...
What do you do with that?
You know, it's like you do declare it, but even when they hand you a packet of cash, what do you do with that? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying you cheat, but...
Some of it goes towards groceries and
yeah, you
we
never
just
know.
Leave it.
And so it's... I don't know if it's not... I think it's maybe not... having anybody that will bail us out if mm-hmm. everything goes wrong. So we're constantly
gig to gig. Yeah, there's something interesting in just moving to LA and not having that safety net is kind of, I think you need to be prepared, but also it forces you to work harder, I think, in some ways.
I mean, all the time I've been here, I'm constantly figuring out clients. And then whenever I do some direct marketing, like, I just did an email to this one client who hadn't booked me in like, I don't know, 4 years or so or something like that, and said, hey, I'm not seeing you in several, it's a library, but it's a great one because you go down and you do three and you get a grand for the day. And anytime I can make a grand in a day in LA, I'm happy.
Sure.
You know, and they were, oh yeah, sure. Come on down. Let's do this. And that was one, me being proactive as opposed to just waiting for magical people to say, hey, come perform for me. I actively went after former clients. Mm-hmm. And then I sent out a whole nother email blast, which is great now. Think about this, Nick. This is awesome. It used to be you had to put a little stamp on a postcard before the internet. Now you can just do little email blasts to former clients or people that know of you. Mm-hmm. And then I got two gigs out of I did a 30 client, people that had never booked me, 30 library thing, and two of them came in and said, oh, yeah, we want to book you.
Wow.
So, and these are people in different parts of the library circuit that I don't normally do. And then there's just other stuff. When I was doing warm up, I would always direct, you know, call them up. So, I don't know. I will do all shows at all times.
So, I want to jump back just a little bit. It's still like, so I'm a child product of the 90s Nickelodeon, and the fact that we are friends and the fact that your wife has been so gracious to like take us out to coffee and like invite us over to your house a few times. Your wife is Mo from Guts, and anybody who grew up in the 90s, that's a really big deal because that was a big show. And you also worked on Nickelodeon television in Orlando.
Yeah.
Could you discuss that or just we've talked about this to death,
but
it's still fascinating.
It is fascinating, but we always forget about it because when she was on Nickelodeon, it was terrible, 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 terrible. And I'm going to say terrible two more times. Terrible, terrible money. So people see you on TV and they think, oh, my gosh, you're living like rock stars. I was making more doing juggling shows than she was making per episode on a TV show, and it was no residuals. Mm-hmm. But it was exciting. She did like 125 episodes, and that was really fun, you know, and cool. And she still gets recognized. Like, she'll be at like we were checking into a hotel, and a person said, you seem very familiar. And then we asked, and he was a big Guts fan, you know. And then now, though, she gets a lot of recognition from her video game work because she's characters in various video games and mm-hmm. things like that. And then I got all the talent for the second season of What Would You Do with Mark Summers, because the first year I was on it just as the talent. I did unicycling with a kid on my shoulders, and then What did I do? I did two bits on that one, and maybe I balanced some. I balanced a vacuum, I think, on my chin. And then they said, you know all the novelty people in Florida, so come be the talent coordinator. And then I ended up writing some scripts for them and doing a talk show for them that never aired. And that was just being at Universal at the time, and somebody met me, and then I got into Nickelodeon that way. In fact, I got my wife's headshot, or then girlfriend, into Nickelodeon for her to get the audition for Guts.
Oh, wow.
And so that's how it's all this weird circle, mm-hmm. you know. But yeah, it's weird. Whenever I mention it at shows that I'm married to Mo from Guts, I can tell the age of the audience by who cheers and who doesn't know what I'm talking about.
Totally. Yeah.
And now the age range is somewhere like, I'd say the people that really know the wife are like 28 to like 35,
yeah,
something
I think
like
that's
that.
Accurate. Yeah, because so, my brother is 25.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be 31 this year. And yeah, we're kind of, he kind of just missed out on that. And my wife and I, and probably another 5 years ahead of us, are all very familiar
so,
with that section of pop culture.
It just is this, it's like the classic 90s Nick that they're kind of, it just is this one age group and that people always remember.
Mm-hmm.
And they tried to do a reboot of Guts, but it just didn't go. And they should have just brought back the Moore and Michael Malley. It would have been great.
You know? It does make sense why they wouldn't have done it.
I think they were just so worried. Oh my gosh. At the time of the reboot, I think. I can't remember how old Maura was at the time. She might have been late 30s or maybe early 40s. And it would have been scandalous to have that age on there. But
sure.
You know, it didn't work. So there you go.
So you guys, you're working at Universal Orlando. You're producing Nickelodeon. You're working on Nickelodeon shows. What is the decision to move out to LA?
Well, I mean, the thing about when we were working at Nickelodeon, here's the funny part. Like when I was working as a juggler at Universal, this was back in whatever, when was this? The 90s, like 1990, I think it was. Yeah, 1990, 91, somewhere around there. I was making like a grand a week, 6 days a week at Universal. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then I got a job producing for a talk show pilot for Nickelodeon. And I went from a grand to about $500 a week. So it's so funny how people thought, oh, he's got an office and he's got a title. He must be making so much more, but I was making half the amount of money I was making.
Sure.
But then at the time in Orlando, I think when I first moved into my apartment, it was $385 for an apartment, which was awesome. So then, I mean, after working at Nickelodeon and more working on Guts, we just decided to do the Canadian Fringe Festival, you know, where they have mm-hmm. like 10 days and then you keep your tickets. You have to have an application fee, but then you keep the ticket. Then we toured Canada, ended up in L.A., and we weren't sure where we were going. And then we slept on friends' couches and said, well, let's just start here. And it's a huge market, so that as soon as now, because I've been here so long and the wife's been here so long, we have tons of clients, where the Orlando market is, you know, somewhat small other than the amusement park stuff.
Yeah.
You know, but now, I mean, for clients, I have, we both do Teatro Martini, a show, a Downtown Disney, Magic Castle, Hermosa Beach Comedy Magic. Then I have all my library shows and private clients. So it actually works out that after being here so long, you kind of gain clients. Because what is L.A. a city of like? Is it with L.A., San Diego, all this Southern California? Is it like, I don't know, like 6-7 million or 8 million?
I don't think that's far off.
Something like that.
Sounds right, yeah.
So that's a huge database. That's a huge amount of people that you can have them give you money. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then the wife does voiceover, and it's, you know, for audiobooks, video games, animation. She's in the new How to Train Your Dragon, kind of a one for, I think it's for Hulu or Netflix, and it's geared toward preschoolers. She's like a new character in that right now. So there's just so many more clients here. Mm-hmm. And I think we just decided to stay because we didn't have any other gigs anywhere else. But then we started getting gigs. Like within 5 months, I had a big commercial gig, and for many years, I did like 60 or 70 national TV commercials, which were awesome.
Wow.
That was great. I have a pension with the Screen Actors Guild, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Which a lot of times as 1099 people, we forget to put into our pension because we're always paying bills. You know?
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. That's what's interesting about LA to me is It's a lot more competitive, but there is a lot more work out there. And I was reading Jenna Fisher's book on acting last night, and she was mentioning Chicago, and I lived in Chicago for many years. And it's almost more competitive, and same with Orlando, it's almost more competitive in markets like that because there's smaller opportunities, there's less opportunities, and there's just as many, if not more, talented people. And I kind of got that a little bit in Orlando.
Maybe, you know, it's weird. I often wonder that because when I was in Orlando, I worked at Universal, and then I had shows after when I was at Universal, and I would go work at Mercado. It was this weird marketplace where they had entertainment in the evening. So then I was double dipping, like I would work all day, then go to the next show, work two shows in the evening, I think it was. I can't remember what. And then I would work at SAC Theater doing shows and getting some. And then all the people there moved to LA and they all found work. I don't know if the same people find work in all the markets, so it doesn't matter what market you're in. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I do think that in LA, you're more likely to. I think there's a ghost happening.
the light flickering in this dark sound booth.
I think in LA, at least when you're in LA, you have more chances to get big gigs like commercials, TV, movies. Yeah. I mean, the wife's worked. And then one of the big things the wife does is looping on movies, which you get residuals for that, which you don't really get in Orlando or Chicago or New York as much. So there's bigger money opportunities in LA. But I think wherever you are, if you're successful in those markets, if you're one of the top people, you'll still be able to work in LA, I think. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, I think so. What has... I was so focused on the Nickelodeon stuff. Now my mind is blanking. What do you see? What is, you know, next for you? What any like aspirations that you haven't done? Anything that you wanna?
Well, pursue? Always it'd be great to be on TV. You know, I mean, all the little bits I've done on TV have been fun. But you know, it'd be great to, you know, get some. The weird thing with people like us and also magicians, whatever. We are always that weird thing where we're not getting on Comedy Central in like a comedy half hour or whatever. Mm-hmm. And yet, but then we're billed as like, it's the magic of David Blaine or whatever. In fact, this is one of the things I did the other night that I've always wanted to do. And it was the exact perfect response on Sunday night. I asked the audience, name me a famous juggler. They could not name one. And then I asked the audience, name me a famous magician. They said David Blaine. Mm-hmm. And my point exactly is that for some reason, no one knows the name of a juggler. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's it. Maybe you've just given me the thing. Maybe this will be my new hook is to...
Someone says juggler, say Michael Rayner.
And they'll say my name. They'll say Michael Rayner. Because W.C. Fields in the day was sort of a juggler, but no one remembers him. Michael Davis, who was around in like the late 80s, was on SNL, had a tiny... fraction of a time where people knew his name, but only people that knew that were into comedy and novelty and variety knew his name. But if you ask the average person on the street, they're far more likely to know a magician's name than know a juggler's name.
Well, still with magic, it's like one of three. You know, it's Angel, Chris Angel, David Blaine, or David Copperfield.
And then it'll always be Houdini. That'll be like, but is even that fading, do you think, with the young generation?
I think so. I think that's, I mean, Taylor Hughes, I love you, and he has this amazing, amazing monologue about how Houdini is, you know, stood the test of time. He has kids who Houdini is, and they know. And I don't think that's as true as it used to be,
right?
But there is truth to it, and I think, I mean, I do a straitjacket escape from time to time in my adult show, and I'll say, do you know who Harry Houdini is? And very rarely do people say no. So, I mean, there is total truth, but I think... in terms of younger generations, because usually an adult up for that bit, I think he is starting to fade a little bit. But I don't know. But
100 years is a good run, isn't it?
Still, it's very impressive.
Yeah, I mean, think of actors, even famous actors in the 60s. Nobody knows them a lot of times that might have been famous, and especially even TV actors. It's such a fleeting thing. I mean, this gets back and circles back around to our very beginning statement about in L.A., if you think you're so special, unless you're one of the few, you really are not special. And as soon as you can know you're not special, then you can say anything on stage and do anything and not have to fear anything because really no one's taking anything away.
Mm-hmm. That's the cool thing about doing shows in LA. I mean, I've been doing a lot of ships lately and it's like you're not on pins and needles, but you really can't. you can't cross a certain line no matter.
I did one Disney cruise and I just don't think they liked me. I'm improvisational. I'm weird. I mean, I didn't say anything inappropriate, but like even the slightest thing, if some woman's crazy, like at Teatro this week, somebody said her name. She said her name was Sandy. And I go, Sandy. And I did this whole drunk bit where I made it like she was drunk and she was taking the Uber home because she had a little bit of a drunk vibe. You couldn't even do that on a Disney cruise because I know that then that's making fun of the guest. And then there's just so many parameters. So you're always the fear factor because you like money and I like money. We all like money. To get away from the fear and just like Sunday night, I really did enjoy myself on Sunday night. I even texted you and asked how long did it? It was actually more like 4 minutes. But you
Kristen,
said seven.
When I said that, Kristen's like, it was like 4 or 5. Yeah, and I'm like, it felt like seven in a good way.
Yeah, yeah. Because I was just enjoying yelling and talking about all the ills of show business and making fun of things.
Literally screaming at the audience is amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And just,
I would love to put in some bits of it into this podcast if I can get the out. I'll see if I can get some of it.
Oh, my gosh. The Bad Boys of Magic just sent me the footage.
That's great.
And I did 22 minutes. And that was nice because they said, well, it's 15 minutes set, but you can do as long as you want. And then the cool part was, whoever their camera person, it was two angles, so they kept on cutting back and forth, so it looked like amazing. Because when I do Hermosa Beach, I love Hermosa Beach, but it's a one straight on,
but and you can't hear the audience that well.
And when I would turn different ways, the other cut would make it look super cool because I'd be right into the camera. I really, whoever was the on video and audio, and you know, because we didn't have a mic the other night, it was amazing. It was
terrific. They're great. Yeah, and I mean, if you're in LA, go check out their show. They do it once a month at the Three Clubs, the new Bad Boys of Magic. I think the next one's April 18th, maybe something like that.
Yeah,
I did it in October, and I had a blast. And
no, it was super.
They
fun.
Literally called me at 4 o'clock for a 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock show. Oh, hey, we had somebody cancel.
Yeah,
like
well, that's it. That was part of the thing because our good friend John Armstrong had to cancel to do America's Got Talent, and I mean, why I ranted about that was,
oh yeah, I want to talk about your experience.
I mean, here's the thing about America's Got Talent.
Just going back two episodes on this podcast, I was ranting about it with Scott Neary, and he was kind of giving me crap about being bitter about not getting it. And I know from your aspect and other people that have gone through it, and his too, which he told an amazing story of how they didn't use any of the footage. But anyway, yeah, going back
but
to your story.
I mean, here's the thing. For years, they always asked me to audition. I always refuse. Then my friend Derek Hughes and my friend Drew Lynch got into the top 10. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've known Drew ever since he was hanging around Flappers Comedy Club that I do a lot of shows at. And I've known Derek since, gosh, many years. We've done
both amazing.
And they're really good. And they got into the top 10. And then Drew ended up getting second. You know, then I was like, well, I know these guys. They did, you know, they got far into it. But I still wasn't going to audition. But finally they said, listen, just come down to Flappers, do 3 minutes. And don't worry about it. So I did 3 minutes. I didn't worry about it. And then they said, can you come down and stand? And I said, I can't do anything. You just tell me where to be. And they said, you can come down to the Staples Center, walk right in and do this little audition thing. We'll get you right on. I said, well, I got a show. I'll be there for half an hour. And I was there for half an hour. And then I said, I got to leave now. And they said, but wait, you're not. Yeah, I said, I'd be here for a half an hour and I got to go now. Because this is, I told you, I had a half an hour. And they didn't understand why I was going. I said, because I have clients waiting for a show.
That are going to pay me.
Right. And so then they called me up and said, you're on the show. No, it doesn't matter that I was not in the thing. You know what I mean? So then I do all the pre-interview, all the stuff. I mean, I just fill out all the paperwork, which is extensive. And then I'm there all day shooting. And then I'm there the next day. No, I think I'm there all day shooting, and then I'm going to go on like 11 o'clock at night. Right before I go on, they say, oh, we have to stop production because of union rules. Next day, I finally get on, and before I even do my cheeseburger trick, Simon gets mad at Heidi. And so Heidi starts throwing my cheeseburgers at Simon, and then he X's me before I even begin.
Oh, my God.
So I get X'd before I begin because Heidi was throwing cheeseburgers at Simon. As I'm spinning my cheeseburger, what's her name? Mel B. then X's me, and then I finish up my bit, whatever. And this is a bit that people have dug. Norman Lear loved it, and I came to his house to do it, and it was Elon Musk doing this bit. But for
no, the routine is you have a parasol, you spin it,
right.
And you spin a cheeseburger on there,
right.
And it's not an easy thing to do. It's
and
very
people
impressive.
Enjoy it, and I do little jokes
it's a bit.
During
it's a great
it.
Bit.
It's a fun bit. And so anyways... that, you know, then Mel B was like, I could do that. And so
it's the
then,
only thing she can do.
And then on the actual show, they only showed 2 seconds of me. And that was funny because when the boys were introducing me, they said, he's been on America's Got Talent. I just interrupted them and said, 2 seconds. I was on for 2 seconds. And it gets a laugh because I like demystifying credits.
Yeah.
Like, I have that credit and I will use that credit, but it's only 2 seconds. So, and then... but somehow the whole bit was on in like either on the on YouTube or in England or something. So I took the footage and re-edited it. So when the audience is cheering, when Heidi's throwing burgers at Simon, it's as if they're cheering for me. And then when Heidi's looking happy, seeing the trick, that's how it finishes. And I took the footage. So I had a bad experience, but I re-edited the footage for my benefit because reality shows do that all the time.
Yeah.
And then when I was Sunday night, when I was at the Bad Boys of Magic, I went on and on about America's Got Talent, and I was screaming at the audience that Mel B had a love child with Eddie Murphy, and she's judging me, and then Simon Cowell had sex with his best friend's wife and had a baby, and he's judging me, and those are two true things, you know. And so that's what was exciting. I was cruel and vicious and with the judges.
Yeah, we just had a friend on. I won't name it because I don't know what they're going to use or what's going to happen with it, but he was just like, you know, Simon was the only one that X'd him and called it unpolished, a routine that he's been doing
right.
for years. That is his signature routine. And I just told him, like, man, just keep your head down, keep your head up, whatever's got to be. Just get the footage.
Yeah. Yes.
Get the credit and get out of there because, you know, they could rip you apart and they could treat you like crap. Or you could, you know, be a piff or a tape face and do really well on it. And it's just, that's just...
But here's the thing. I was talking to Taylor, is it Williamson who was second 1 year, the comedian?
Yeah.
You know
mm-hmm.
Taylor, don't you?
Mm-hmm. I've done a show with him, yeah.
Yeah, and he was saying, you know, after that first year, it's all great, everything's amazing.
Totally.
But then you still got to work after that.
Well, I mean, that's...
You know, and
Piff
then,
has the Piff the Magic Dragon has this show in Vegas that was doing great, and I think it's still doing well, but I saw him over the summer, and he's like, hey, how many people saw me on America's Got Talent? And maybe 2 people clapped in this theater of
right.
probably 200 people, maybe, and... So it fades away
it
quickly.
It fades so quickly. That's why
so
it's
so much
like,
stress and work for something that's, yeah. you know, tiny.
Yeah.
But going back to the credits, I like the idea of destroying or just demeaning the credit or taking power away from the credit because so many people use credits of, hey, he did this, hey, he did that. But the fact that I think it's funnier and more impressive to the audience when you say, I was on America's Got Talent for 3 seconds.
Yeah, yeah.
Because then you do a good job in the show and go, oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, well, yeah, no, I like the humiliation of show business mm-hmm. because I'm a broken human being.
And I think people are relating to that.
That
more
was
and
part
more.
Of the thing that I did. Now you're bringing it all back. I didn't talk about it as much because I always forget what I say when I'm just yelling at the audience. And I went on this whole thing on Sunday mm-hmm. that you probably were molested if you were on the stage, either emotionally or physically. That if you're standing on stage and then I had something about an insurance salesman, how can you even live that life? How can you sit in an office and type on a little piece of paper and hand it over and that's your life or whatever?
Yeah.
You know? No, it's weird because when I was ranting and raving, it was almost like it's fun, but I don't quite remember what I say.
Yeah.
Because it's not my show. It's just things I'm thinking about the day.
Mm-hmm. No, there's no filter. It's just coming
out. Were you there the day at Booby Trap when I was going on and on about my daughter's tutor?
Yeah, that was amazing. You just lost it.
Yes,
and talked
I lost
about
it.
That you spent X amount of dollars on a tutor.
$95 for a tutor.
For your daughter who's already like a 4.0
student. She's a 4.0 student. And I was never very good at school. And they always said you'd need it for something, and I don't. But the only thing I would have needed it for was to help my daughter. So they were right. I would have needed it to help my daughter. I would have saved $95 if I would have had some kind of math skills, you know. And I'm not talking like ABC, you know, like algebra. I'm talking about it was like pre-calc. So.
Sure, yeah. I feel like even so, unless you're a mathematician, you're not going to be able to help out in that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm fascinated by math, and I try to go back sometimes and look at old algebra or old calculus stuff, and I'm like, oh, I can't do that anymore.
No.
And my brain just doesn't even comprehend it anymore.
No, not at all.
It's like language. If you either use it or you lose it,
I think. I don't know. I know comedians might be doing something like this, but I think anybody can still use it. Is like they'll get dumb math problems where it's like Jenny has 100 watermelons, and you stop right there. You go, why does a kid have 100 watermelons? There's no reason Jenny needs 100 watermelons. Mm-hmm. Right now, I want to contact somebody because a 9-year-old that has 100 watermelons is not a normal 9-year-old.
She's clearly stealing from Costco.
Yeah, there's something wrong going on here because no 9-year-old needs 100 watermelons.
We're talking about where her parents are.
Yes,
why
exactly.
Why aren't they taking
care of her? So those are the things why, even when the wife and I were trying to do hypnotherapy, we were having the birth of our first child so we could be relaxed during the birth, the hypnotherapist goes, okay, you're in a forest, and there's a deer, a young deer wandering. And as soon as she said deer, I thought of being in Michigan and Ted Nugent killing the deer.
Yep.
You know, that's the first thing, because Michigan is the deer hunting place.
That's just like taking you right back to your subconscious.
That's right.
Did that work? Do you think it worked for you?
Well, I don't think it worked for me, but I think for the wife it was great.
I think with hypnosis it really comes down to whether or not you want to.
I want to go to a hypnotist again because I know physically I practice juggling tricks that I can do relatively well one day, and then the next day when I go into the gym they're terrible. And the next day they're relatively good. There's some block that happens on each day of practice, which I can never figure out why some days are good, some days are bad.
I have that too with certain tricks. I can just go and boom, 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 do the move. And then other times I'll go to do it and I'll just completely flub up the move, or I'll completely like put the card in my mouth a weird way where I'm like gagging with the balloon on my head. And it's just like I've done this literally 1,000 times. Like I've done the math. I've done it over 1,000 times. And still, like, something weird will happen because it's live.
It's like when I'm doing my tennis racket trick and I go under the leg, there'll be whole show. It'll be fine for 3 years. And then all of a sudden, I can't lift my leg up correctly. And I'm like, I get this weird glitch in my routine. It's like, why did that glitch you? But it's like baseball players. You see amazing baseball players that'll go, like, 0 for 33 after being phenomenal. And then they can't hit the ball again.
I've had new respect for sports ever since I've been looking at it in that way of you have to produce this product, this skill under immense pressure, you know, flawlessly every single time. And I feel like in a weird way, we're kind of similar to that, where we're constantly redoing.
Well, it's 100% similar because people are watching you and you have to divorce yourself from the fact that people are watching you. This is why I was talking to somebody about magic. Why I always, like, I know with my juggling trick, if it goes wrong, the audience will let me try again, and then they'll cheer no matter what.
Yeah, it's almost better sometimes.
And it's better. But if you flash as a magician, you can't go back because that's it. It's all done.
I was doing, they're having me more and more do close-up magic shows, like projected close-up magic shows for cruise ships. And I've done close-up one-on-one for years, and it's like it's usually low stakes. You know, if it doesn't go well, you just go into the next group of 5 people. But there's something psychologically different when 100 people are now watching this card trick that you do for 4 people.
Right.
And the one time, my second show, I'm like, all I have to not do is flash the only blue card in the deck. That's all I have to not do. Pull out the deck. The first thing I do is flash the blue card. I'm like, son of a bitch.
Oh.
You just keep going and like, whatever. But, and how many people notice that? I don't know. But for me, it's just funny how you tell your brain, don't do this one thing. Don't think about pink elephants. And then you do it.
Well, I think that is weird, though, because I think close-up is unnatural when they project it on a screen. I don't think close-up was ever designed when close-up first started.
But people are like, it's the reason our buddy John Armstrong is doing really well in chips, and I have more and more people come up to me after shows and go, hey, I really love that small card trick, because I think we're in this state of people have seen big box illusions, they've seen the big girl gets sawed in half and they're kind of over it and they think they know how it's done because of all those TV shows that have exposed it in incorrect ways, but people don't know the difference. So when they see pure sleight of hand, I think they're appreciating it more due to shows like Fool Us.
But it is weird because think of the physical body and your physical hands. When it's projected, everything is like five times bigger.
Mm-hmm.
So things sometimes do look a little bit awkward sometimes.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Because you're so much bigger on the screen.
It's that, and like normally an angle you'd be at
right.
where you would cover the move is now suddenly exposed because you're standing slightly to the left. And that's something I was figuring out when we were teching. I'm like, I have to keep being aware of where the light's coming from, where I'm standing, because they'll see how everything works. It was funny
because the Bad Boys, how the Bad Boys of Magic, how it is, we were over on the side a little bit. And I saw a flash of one of the effects because I was just at the wrong angle for it. It wasn't their fault at all. But that's why it's like theaters that have this curve around where you're getting almost to a side angle. It's just deadly.
Yeah, for magic, I don't understand. I just can't do anything that isn't in the round. That's the good thing. Going back to Disneyland and working Downtown Disney, and in my case working Disney World before that and Universal, it teaches you to play two in the round, and it
right.
teaches you to play in those situations where it's like, if there's anything angle heavy, which I still do like one or two things that I'm somehow getting away with and I don't know how, doing street shows, it teaches you to play to like the full circle.
But what's the magician, if a magician knows, if they see the crowd and they're like, okay, there's 100 people, but I can see these angles, there's going to be 8 people that I flash it. Do they just like, well, that's the way it is?
Kind of what I do. I mean, it's the way I load the card into my mouth is I have to, there, no matter what, some people to my right will see it. But it is my hope that either they see it and the time delay is they don't put the two together.
Right.
Or they're even more impressed of how did he, I still don't understand how that happened. You know, it's playing with that. And I don't know. That's the tricky thing about certain magic tricks is just, are you concerned about those 5 people when there's another 200 people that are going to be fooled?
Here's my dilemma. And this is a frustration that's sort of an opposite thing. I'll have shows where I'll do a trick and I balance. One of the tricks is I balance a wheelbarrow on my chin. And this last week, and in fact, I ranted about this girl named Paisley at the show on Sunday. She was horrific. She was 9 and horrific. And I think about how people have PTSD about things, and I have them about small children that are awful. Anyways, she was convinced there was some type of string device that comes down from the ceiling, hooks on the wheel of the wheelbarrow, and then I balance it, but it's just hooked on the ceiling. And then I did it on my knees so she can completely see there was no string, and then still convinced there was magical secret string and that I wasn't actually balancing a wheelbarrow on my chin. No matter what I did, she was convinced it was a
children
trick.
Children are just tiny alcoholics, man, sometimes.
That is so
true. They treat they train you for adult shows. Like, I'm no longer worried about adult shows because I've done so many, like, crazy kid shows.
Oh, absolutely. No, I mean, Braemar Country Club. Like, I hate country clubs in general. I find them elitist and wrong, and everything about them I despise. Two, Braemar Country Club this year, I had a show that was like, I was scheduled to do an hour, which I think is long for kids. You know, I always want to do 45. And it was a different company that scheduled me for an hour. And I said, you got 60 minutes down here. And this is for like, you know, 9-year-olds or 10-year-olds. I can't remember exactly what. And then I talked to the actual person that was the actual client. And they said, we'll give you some more if you go 15 more minutes. So now they want me to go 75 minutes. I got into about, I think I did 67 minutes. I did an extra 7 because the entire show, they were pulling on the mic cord. No matter where I was, they wouldn't move back. They were throwing balloons in my face during the show. Parents were not helping.
Mm-hmm.
And And then at the end of the show, a guy says to me, he goes, "Hey, can I get your business card?" And I said, "Absolutely not." Absolutely not. And I told the agency that booked me, if they ever call again, I mean, it was relatively good money, but it's like $1,500 base. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't, if this is indicative of that country club, Braemar Country Club in Tarzana, make sure you know. I cannot handle it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's.
And as I said at the show the other night, I have never had a bad show with an all Latino crowd or an all Black crowd. I've done a ton of all Black crowds, all Latino crowds, and it's always like white kids,
mm-hmm.
white kids. or sometimes bar mitzvah kids. I've had out of the 10 bar mitzvahs I've done, it's been 50-50. Five of them great, and the other five horrific.
It's like that same with certain like Middle Eastern or European cult groups too. Like it either goes great or it's what you just described.
Right.
It's that for an hour.
Yeah, it's weird because I've done a lot of the Saudis up in the hills, and it's peculiar. It's more peculiar than anything else because it's like you're in these mansions that are like 67 million and...
You're doing essentially a birthday party show.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always weird. It's always weird.
You just think about the paycheck and go, all right, this will pay for something this week.
That's all. I don't think people that are not performers, if they understand the grind, which is awesome and lovely, but there is a sense of like you are still working. People always think, oh, you get to have fun. No, there's a lot of work involved too.
Yeah. I mean, I did a ship last week. I did a couple ships, and it's great. It's what I've been working on, trying to do. And people are like, oh, you're just on vacation. I'm like, I have to be alert till 10:30 tonight to do an adult show. Like, I have to kill the whole day.
Right.
And then I have to pump up my energy at 10:15.
And it's
not hard. It's not the military. It's not being a teacher. But still, that and then doing it the next day for a couple family shows, and then they added another show, and not complaining. That's the contract I signed. But I don't get to relax until it's all done.
Sure.
And same with like the grind of trying to get the next gig. You don't get to relax. I mean, I just finished some ships. I'm doing a few, like we're doing Booby Trap tonight. I have a couple theater dates, and then I do a week at the Castle, first week in April. But I have 2 weeks of pretty slow, which I've wanted. I've been looking forward to. But I'm day two into it, and my brain is already starting to go a little crazy of, all right, what can I do to get more gigs? What can I do to this? Got to fill up the summer.
Sure.
And
no,
that
absolutely.
Just never stops.
No, and I mean, this is, gosh, what year am I into this? I mean, I'm trying to think. The last time I had a real job was, okay, I got to think back. I think it was 1983. The last time I had a real job was 1983. Since that point, since 1983, all my jobs have either been doing shows, commercials, acting, or writing, because I have written a little bit for TV and whatever, but mostly shows, commercials, warm-up, whatever, since 83. But I'm still only 3 months out from my, like, in 3 months, if you look at my calendar 3 months from now, or not from 3 months, from after, like, August 14th, there's nothing on there. It's completely blank,
mm-hmm.
you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny how that, it's funny, like you can be so busy, like my February, March, April, packed. And then I'm like, well, May is empty.
But are you, do you have a cruise ship agent, right?
Cruise ship, corporate, and then the rest is, I think, just me. I feel like there's occasionally a few other people I work with.
Right.
It's sporadic. It's just, ultimately, just comes down to, I don't know, putting it out in the universe and
now what
away.
You asked me earlier, like, you know, I'd always like to be on TV, and I've written scripts and things and movies and things like that, just, you know, because you do when you have downtime, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wrote a script that had a magician themed as the it's so funny because now magic themed narratives are becoming with Deception and with Now You See Me, like had one and two.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of my scripts are just regular and weird, and one had religious themes. But is there another out other than doing shows for you? Like if somebody said, hey, come work on this TV show as a writer, I would go do it. It'd be
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, totally. Same.
I'd be totally into it. Mm-hmm. Is there another out for you?
Yeah, I'm starting to get to that. I've been talking about that with other performers, and they kind of take it weird. They don't know how to take it when I say it. But I really would like to ideally go part-time with Magic, but still taking gigs I want to do, like sure. Ships and, you know, doing the booby traps and whatnot. Only really taking gigs I want to. And then I don't know what it is. I have a couple ideas in my head, but something else to fill that financial gap. And also, I think it will have me enjoy Magic
right.
performing more, because like I did two strolling corporate gigs 2 weeks ago. And the first one, I got home, I was done. Like the client was just a jerk and all these things. And like it paid fine.
Yeah.
It's not hard money, but it's just like it's emotionally a toll.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
like
yeah.
I've been doing this since 2001 to 2004-ish, because I started in high school and then went full-time after that. So I've been doing this for a long time, over 15 years. And it's just like, okay, I need to get to that next thing to do something else. And
would it be totally something else? Because sometimes when I'm goofing around, I always think, wouldn't it be cool to invent one of those magic tricks that sells between $20 and $40 that everybody wants?
Yeah.
You know,
I think that would have been easier 20 years ago.
Right.
But I mean, that's not saying it can't happen. Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to figure that out now, but, there was something else I was going to say in it too. And it just, my brain got lost. And you were doing a lot of like warm up for a while too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was one of the main sources of income for many, many years here was, the guy that hangs out with an audience during a sitcom taping. And it was super amazing money, but you're only as good as your last producer. Like the producers, one producer I worked with on, Two Guys, a Girl and a Pizza Place, I think it was, she then went on to do Desperate Housewives. So she is now on a drama, not on a sitcom.
So they don't need warm up.
So, of course. So they don't need warm up on a drama or a single camera like a Parks and Rec or The Office. So only the shows that have multi-cam where there's a live studio audience, and then only if the person that knows you. And how do you get to know these people? Well, you're constantly getting to know people. Once you get to know them, and then they hire you, they like you, bring you on to whatever show they're working on. But the next thing you know, they could all be working on shows that don't need warm-up, so you got to meet a whole nother crop of people.
Yeah.
So it's always a weird thing. And plus, as I've said before, that one's an emotionally tough one, because even if you're doing great and the audience loves you and it's, you know, everything's going super wonderfully for you, but if the show's not funny and they're not laughing at the show, then it doesn't matter. You're doing a terrible job. So you're only as good as how much they laugh at the actual content of the show. So it doesn't matter if every joke you do is great. If they're not laughing at the jokes of the show, then you've failed.
Yeah, you're there to serve a bigger
exactly.
purpose.
Exactly. Yeah, so that's exactly it. So
yeah, and it seems like that the live studio three camera thing is fading away a little bit, but maybe...
What? It sort of is, but then there's always like Nickelodeon, yeah. Disney, they keep it rolling.
Even Netflix has a few three camera shows. Yeah, there's the Kathy Bates one, the there's another one called The Ranch, I think.
Oh, okay.
Shows I can't stand, and I'm sure they're fine, but I just... That format is kind of archaic to me. It's the reason
weird.
I can't watch Big Bang. It's just too distracting.
I never watch Big Bang. I mean, it's weird because the shows I like are always weirdo, like Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
What else? Stranger Things, The Marvelous Miss Maisel, because it sort of got a comedic take to it. And it's a period piece set in like the late 50s, which I find fascinating. But I've never seen a whole episode of The Big Bang Theory, and I know that it's been on for like what 11 years or 12 years
easily,
or something
yeah.
crazy.
Yeah,
I never watched Two and a Half Men. I never watched one episode of that, and I know it was on for a million years. I'm trying to think. It's like we do watch as a family. We watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and there's something about that we like.
Yeah.
But so many sitcoms we just don't watch.
Yeah, I think it just depends on your taste, and I like it when a show is playing to like the smartest people in the room, not like in a snooty way or in a referential way, but just like not making fart jokes the whole time. And I feel like even with shows like Big Bang, they're making very simple. They do like a complex equation bit,
right,
and then, you know, hit him with a simple jab of, right, oh, you're sitting in his chair, you know,
sure,
something like that. And I think that's what I like trying to put in my show, and I see in your show too, of just like it's this, we're doing ridiculous things and just chaos on stage, but still I think hopefully we're playing to the smartest person in the room. That's something I learned at Second City, of just like playing to the top of your intelligence.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah. You know, I mean, I think strangely enough, I do like punk rock, and I don't know if I told you this, so I did post it on my Instagram, Broken Juggler, which is my Instagram. There's a group I like, Parquet Courts, that the wife and I went and saw at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery venue, and it's the indoor venue. They also have an outdoor venue, and we didn't realize they were as hard punk rockers that we were. We were in a mosh pit all of a sudden, which was awesome. We were on the outlier. I like anarchy, crazy, weird, smart, funny. But I do like a crazy pounding energy sometimes in my show. The crazier it can get, is the more I have fun and I'm happy. Because a lot of times I see a lot of performers, and I'm sure you do too, there's a certain roteness that you could have seen that performance done the same way 100 times.
Yeah.
A lot of times I try to shake it up. Whenever I'm at a show where I can do anything, that's when I just start doing anything, you know. But we do have to live in the parameters of, like, when we go to a show where the client's paying us good money, we kind of have to do the regular show. Does that make sense?
No, yeah. I mean, that's my adult show on the Disney ships. Is I sent it to my buddy John, and I'm like, John Armstrong, shout out. Again, he listens, so I have to shout out at least 3 times or else he won't listen in the future. I videotaped my adult show, and I'm proud of my silent physical stuff, mm-hmm, and I'm proud of bits that I've created, but when I'm doing my talking adult show, I feel in my head that it could be any magician up there, and that's what I hate. I want, you know, my own voice.
Right.
But, you know, he was complimentary of it, gave me some good notes, didn't rip it apart like I told him to. And same with my wife. She's like, I don't think you give yourself enough credit, because you, at least me, I hold myself to the standard of trying to be so original that sometimes being simple and doing these simple things that maybe other people do, but you're doing it in your own voice, still
right,
works.
I mean, I think the one bit that I always, I don't use as much, but I do always do in my long show, is I juggle a bowling ball, a hatchet, and a Pillsbury Doughboy.
Mm-hmm. That was the first time I saw you ever do that on Sunday, and it's great.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is because I know jugglers forever have been juggling bowling balls and hatchets, and it's like that to me is always the hackness of the juggler world.
Yeah.
But people do enjoy seeing that too,
oh, totally,
though. So it's like I'm always in this weird mix of like, okay, they do enjoy it. And so I add in my third item. Some people use an apple or an egg or whatever. I use the Pillsbury Doughboy because then it's kind of pop culture-y.
Mm-hmm.
Then I can do various things. For here in LA, I do a bit about it's the most dangerous thing here. It represents gluten, because
mm-hmm,
really specific for LA, which I get a laugh on, is like, and then I like to, wouldn't it be scary if he was walking down Fairfax on Passover? Because Fairfax is a Jewish neighborhood here in LA, and Passover you get all the yeast out of your house because it's a leavening, and that's a specific joke just mm-hmm for LA, and it has to be smart. But when it hits great,
because
people know about Passover, they know about whatever. You know,
but you do that at a corporate event, it's going to go over your head.
They would not, it would not be anything. Yeah.
But it is interesting, going back to what you're saying, it is interesting to know when you can do those bits and those references, and to know when you have to just do kind of, I guess I'm calling it like the standard show, the medium
right
temperature show of,
oh,
it's
yeah
going to be fine, but it's not where I want it to be, because if it is, none of this will play.
Right. No, absolutely. No. I think I had some corporate shows this year at Christmas time that, man, I don't know what's up with the audience. They were just like, I don't know. I think I found out later that they had to go back to work. It was an afternoon one.
It's usually that, or they've been around all day, or they didn't know they're going to see entertainment.
That's always
they
the one
I hate.
They just want
to hang out and like drink with their
and
their
chat
work buddies.
With their friends, and when you have to stop them from chatting with your friends, that's the worst part. Is when and we happen to have a show for you guys.
There should never be more than 30 minutes you're performing at a corporate, but they always want an hour.
They always want an hour
because they want to get their money's worth.
Oh my gosh, that is true. I think they should. I think it's ridiculous that they just think longer is better.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Well, we're hitting our time here because you have to go pick up your daughter from learning German. Is that it?
Well, we switched off. Now I'm picking. Yes, that is correct. but actually, now I'm picking up my other daughter just from middle school because then my older daughter is going to stay at. The college and go use their library to do her homework.
Your daughters give me hope in the future of millennials.
Well, I got double. I got a 13, 16, and I don't know. They both get straight A's. I was a 1.97 grade point average, C minus, all straight up C minus.
You said that in a show one time, and I could feel the audience judge you. It was at Two Milk a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, but I always like, I say, do you kids know why I balance a wheelbarrow on my face? And they
That's
go, no,
joke.
Why?
And brilliant.
I said, because I graduated with a 1.97 grade point average. This is a cautionary tale, kids. Cautionary tale. Stay
no,
in school.
It's a brilliant bit. But yeah, like this is the audience that was dying, losing it. And then still there's just that moment of, oh, but you're making fun of that bit. And you're using it to your advantage.
And it's completely true. And the weirdest part about it is... when people ask me how much I make, sometimes I say I make more than a teacher, but less than a principal. so I've done my job, and people always talk about the money aspect of what we do, but the most important aspect is we do get a lot of free time, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we make money, but then the extent that I get to pick up my kids from school, take them to school.
We're doing this at 2:30 on a Wednesday.
I know.
Nobody else can do that.
I know. And then it's just my kids in the summer, a lot of times they can roll with me to shows. They can come to work with me all the time,
mm-hmm.
you know. And my favorite, this will be a good gag thing to end on, but my favorite thing, I take my kids to shows I do at libraries. And I was at a library. And they went to read books, you know, which is great. They get to go hang out at the library, read some books, have some fun. And I was setting up, and then the librarian went over to these two girls that she didn't realize were my daughters and said, do you want to come see the juggler? And they go, no, we're good to just read. And then the librarian said, he's going to balance a wheelbarrow on his face. And they go, yeah, we know. He's our dad. We just want to read.
It's like,
we've seen this.
It, librarian.
We're done.
Yep, I was in the place of your daughters growing up with my dad going
to
shows.
Oh, that's right. That's
right. I've seen it. I've seen him make adults talk. I get it.
You get it.
All right. Well, thank you for doing this, Michael. This was fun.
All right. Thank you. Hello, John Armstrong.
Thank you for listening to Two Magicians, One Mic podcasts. Please rate us on iTunes. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Visit our website, www.twomagiciansonemic.com. Send fan mail or hate mail to twomagiciansonemic@gmail.com. Have a great week.